the Mormon News Report, your weekly dose of Mormonism.
With a doctor's recommended dose of snark, 4 out of 5 doctors agree it is beneficial for your health, Brian.
For those of you listening to us through the Cultural Hall podcast, welcome.
And just a reminder, the Mormon News Report podcast does have its own feed available through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Downcast, whatever pod-fetching app you listen to podcasts through. Just search for the Mormon News Report podcast.
And we've got a great show lined up for you today. Lindsay Hansen-Park from Sunstone will be here to discuss a symposium happening this week.
Or as I like to call it, Mormonpalooza, the gathering of the Mormons, whatever you'd like to call it. But before we get into the news, we do have an announcement. You probably noticed that we've had some really amazing guests come on. People like James Goldberg, Terrell Givens, today's guest, Lindsay Hansen-Park. And I'm sure you're probably thinking, well, 20 minutes really wasn't enough time with them. I want more. Well, now you can. We are now partnering with Patreon to offer our listeners the Mormon News Report extended sessions for just $1 per month. You'll receive access to the Mormon News Report podcast extended feed, which will have all the extended interviews. So you'll have the main podcast, you'll have the normal 20-minute interview we do with our guest. And then guess what? We're going to keep on recording so you can hear the rest of the cool stuff that they say. You can pledge more than $1 per month. We always appreciate that. But all we ask is for $1 to keep the quality interviews coming. Your $1 per month will help the Mormon News Report team to drive more resources to providing you with the best coverage, commentary, analysis, and just a sprinkling of snark to breaking Mormon news. So for those of you who do subscribe, thank you for your support. We hope you find our interviews as useful, entertaining, and worthy of $1 a month as we intend them to be. Now, let's get on with the show.
I hear you're in Utah this week.
Yeah, Brian, I'm actually on location in my in-law's backyard in Payson, Utah. So if you hear the wind, if you hear the fireworks from people celebrating Pioneer Day a little bit earlier, that's what's going on.
Happy Pioneer Day, Brant.
And to you, Brian. So is this where I exchange my Pioneer Day gift to you before or after we do the traditional 40-mile trek with hand carts and funny clothes? Although I will say this, Pioneer Day doesn't mean as much to those of us out in Michigan. It's a state holiday in Utah. And if I understand correctly, it's a paid holiday in Michigan. It's like, huh? Pioneer what?
Well, you know, many of the Gentiles in Utah like to call it Pie and Beer Day, which I got to be honest, Brant, that doesn't sound half bad.
You better watch yourself, Brian. From what I understand, Pioneer Day is a huge thing in Utah. I've seen parades. I've seen fireworks. I've seen barbecues. It's like, I thought you guys already did 4th of July.
I like to think of it as second 4th season.
I'm sure it's probably good for firework sales.
That it is, Brant. Now, speaking of out-of-control patriotism and things blowing up, one of our top stories last week was about the alt-right and white pride Mormon blogger on YouTube who goes by the name Wife with a Purpose. Now, she was destroyed on Twitter after posting a meme that started with, quote, smart women can choose to be scientists, or they can choose to make 6 more scientists, and added, quote, which serves society better. If you want a real popcorn show, folks, check out the comments in this poop storm.
And you know, the worst part is her following and the people that just seem to bend over backwards to defend her. Look, Brian, I don't think it's shocking to say that we Mormons don't have the best history with race. A Wife with a Purpose not only is not helping that, but her defenders are making it even worse.
And it's insane. She has 30,000 followers. I mean, quite honestly, I'm jealous. But I'm not sure if that tells us more about her or about our nation. Listen to some of her rhetoric about white nationalism and her mental gymnastics around why she isn't a white nationalist.
For America, I'm not a white nationalist. America was built predominantly by whites. So you could call me a predominantly white nationalist or a majority white nationalist. But I'm not a complete white nationalist when it comes to America. I think America was built the vast majority, you know, 90% of America was built by Europeans. And I think that their posterity has a right to retain their culture and their values and their system and their demographics. Okay, so maybe I'm like a 90% white nationalist.
How are you a 90% white nationalist? Isn't that like being 90% pregnant?
This is the most insane thing I've ever heard. And Brian, I think this is a perfect example of let's give a crazy a microphone or a Twitter handle and let's let her go off. Even though, look, okay, I don't want to diminish the whole factor of what she's saying, but let's take the racism and the nationalism thing out of it, right? You just listen to the content of what she's saying and it is so incredibly superfluous that I'm listening to it going, why on earth is anyone giving her a microphone? The best thing that anybody could do. And I know there's been a lot of people on Twitter who are saying someone needs to do something about this. The LDS church needs to do something about this. No, you want to know the best thing that anybody could do is just to completely ignore her, because the only thing that's happening now is more and more people are talking about it, legitimately talking about it, because it is insane what she's saying. But it's just giving her more and more of a voice. And the most, I said it before, the most disturbing thing is people are buying into it and her defenders are sometimes just as bad as her. So that's where I just sit there and go, you know what? I would love to just ignore this. Like, I don't know, really awkward credit card that I don't ever want to pay. Just ignore it until it becomes an issue and then finally just deal with it all at once. But I just continually addressing it and going after her like this, it doesn't do anything because it just gives them fuel to their persecuted complex fire.
Right. So you've had an opportunity to listen to her. You know that she's off her hinges. And from this point forward, just don't give her any attention, right? Until everybody else, stop giving her attention.
And I think what we do now is we say, okay, so now you know the issue. And anytime anyone says, oh, have you heard about what's going on with this? Say, yeah, she's nuts. So what else you got to talk about? Because I don't want to talk about this because I don't want to give her any airtime. But another big story this week also deals with nationalism. This time, Russian nationalism. Brian, we almost need to have the Soviet national anthem playing right now. The Salt Lake Tribune printed an article looking at the ban that Vladimir Putin imposed a year ago this month on open proselyting for most religions, including from LDS missionaries.
This ban on missionaries was part of a comprehensive anti-terrorism law that Putin signed, and it's so strict that LDS missionaries have to operate in secret and can't even wear their trademark missionary name tags.
Which has got to be totally confusing to Russians, who are probably like, why is this well-dressed a young American girl with this awkward grasp of the Russian language, who probably speaks at about a kindergarten level, just hanging around in my town all day smiling at me? It makes me uncomfortable because I don't think that many Russians smile.
But on a serious note, though, some of these undercover missionaries are being mistaken for undercover American spies.
You know, in the 1950s, they might have been considered either American or Soviet spies, and now they're just Mormon missionaries. And spies would probably be much better, much more fluent in Russian.
Well, and they probably wouldn't be hanging around the grocery store parking lots asking every elderly Russian lady if they could help them with their grocery bags.
Because that's what we do as Mormon missionaries. That's our version of service is, can we help you with your bags?
Can we load your cart?
Yeah, can we load your car? Do you need us to shut the door behind you? Because then we can, you know, check it off and say, hey, we did service today. But at least the lack of name tags should overcome one past obstacle. Why are all Mormon boys named Elder? And are all Mormon girls really sisters? I mean, I know you had big families, but sheesh, guys.
Yeah, that joke probably died about 30 years ago, Brent. But you know
why? Yeah.
Well, I doubt that the church is sending many new missionaries into Russia. Here's some tips from one returned missionary. Should you somehow find yourself actually assigned there?
Don't freak out if you get, you know, a letter home and your son says he was taken into the precinct or picked up by the police. If you had a drunk throw a beer bottle at him or something, they are common instances.
All right. So first of all, the advice you're giving, considering everything that's going on in Russia with Mormon missionaries right now, is don't freak out. You might want to rethink your advice because that's probably the last thing that a parent wants to hear. And B, I mean, I get it. I mean, I served my mission in South Korea. We dealt with a lot of drunk Koreans who did the same thing for us. But yeah, probably with everything that's going on, the last thing you want to tell a worried mother is, you know what, just don't freak out if they get taken into a precinct. It's probably no big deal, except for the fact that, you know, it's Russia. I mean, and at least it's beer cans that they're throwing and not Smirnoff bottles. I mean, aren't Russians already intimidating enough?
Yeah, I think that they probably are. You know, switching gears, Brant, what do Moscow potatoes and BYU have in common?
They are all white things that exist in Idaho.
That's right. Huh? The land of the rising spud.
And my alma mater, BYU, Idaho, where, like Russia, freedom of expression is, let's say, is discouraged.
The big news coming out of BYU, Idaho this week was the firing of adjunct political science professor Ruthie Robertson after she posted a statement on her Facebook page supporting the LGBT community.
In her Facebook post, she called out the LDS Church in fairly strong terms for its involvement with Proposition 8 in California and the church handbook policies that label same-sex marriage as an act of apostasy and prevents children being raised in same-sex homes from becoming a member of the church until they reach legal adulthood. She wrote, quote, "For an organization that places so much importance on the family unit, this policy sure seems to be attacking a form of that unit," end quote. She believes a former roommate sent her post to the university's administrators. According to reports, she was called in within hours and asked to retract the post, which she refused to do.
To be fair, she did issue a follow-up post stating that her views did not reflect the university's. She wrote, quote, "As an employee of BYUI, my views do not reflect the school or LDS Church. These are my personal beliefs, and they have no place in my classroom, nor will they ever." But by this point, the damage was already done, and her contract for the fall quarter was not renewed. She claims that she was within her rights to post on her personal Facebook. Here's a clip where she discusses the honor code and the faculty handbook.
So the biggest things is, number one, professors live by the honor code as well as the students. So the BYU honor code is what faculty members agree to as well. And that's the major portion of like how we're supposed to conduct ourselves inside and outside of the university in our classrooms. And if you look at the honor code, there's absolutely nothing in it that says you have to agree with 100% of what the church says. And it doesn't say anything about, you know, using social media to express yourself or anything. It doesn't cover that in the honor code. And then once you get down into the nitty gritty part of like the faculty handbook, it talks about conduct within the classroom. And within that, of course, it's about building and supporting the testimonies of Christ. But looking throughout the entire handbook, there's nothing in it that says you can't use social media as a platform to express your own opinions.
So, Brian, you remember that song from the Lego Movie a few years ago, Everything is Awesome. Let's call this segment Everything is Awful. You see, I really don't see anyone as blameless here. On one hand, you have BYU Idaho, an accredited institution of higher learning whose motto is rethinking education, acting, frankly, totalitarian in their reaction to this situation. Granted, Ruthie was an adjunct professor, not a tenured professor, allowing someone to express a difference of thought or an issue on their personal, private social media account. But to be honest, Ruthie's not blameless either. You know that old story about the turtle taking a scorpion across the river, and before they get to the end, he stings the turtle. As they're drowning, the scorpion says, "You knew what I was when you picked me up." So Ruthie should have known what the church education system was when she picked them up. So yeah, if you're an easily disposable adjunct faculty like Ruthie without tenure at BYU-Idaho, at institution that, in my opinion, is more conservative than BYU-Provo, it's probably easier to get rid of the situation and fill it with another just as easy to dispose of adjunct faculty who's probably dying to work at an LDS institution. Because I think we all know by now it's not about the pay. So yeah, both sides are equally to blame, and it's a much more complex issue than either side wants it to be. Because if there's one thing that we've learned, Brian, it's that it's much easier for the collective Mormon internet to separate into their faith politics camps and lob out oversimplified talking points than engaging with the complexities of the situation.
I mean, you got to be careful out there, folks, in social media. Once you post something, it goes to the entire world and it becomes part of the public record. You have to be careful, particularly if you work for a socially conservative institution. I mean, we all know that the only person that conservatives ever give a pass to on social media is Donald Trump.
Hey-o. Brian, it seems clear that as millennials are starting to graduate college and enter the workforce, this is going to be an ongoing issue. You know, basically people taking to social media, posting their views about things, especially if those views are now in contact with, say, people in their ward, people in their church, LDS leadership, anything like that. But this is a good segue into our next story. Religion scholar Jana Reese, who is also a friend of the Mormon News Report, was interviewed by Doug Fabrizio this week about her findings from the Next Mormon survey that she conducted. Check out this clip.
I think it is important to have the conversation of what is going on within Mormonism that may be appealing or not appealing to millennials. You know, there are some things that are very, very good, like the emphasis on missionary work, volunteerism, that seems to really strike a chord with this generation. There are some things that are pretty clearly an alienating factor, like the church's stance on LGBT issues.
Besides LGBT issues, other items of generational disparity included whether bishoprics should hold beatboxing competitions, mic drops should be permitted at the end of testimonies, and whether Snapchat should count as home and visiting teaching appointments.
As well as whether Studio C is, I don't know, actually funny or just kind of weird. Brian, it's the last days. We all need to take a side on this very pivotal issue, and I'm not going to let you go until you take a side on what Studio C is.
Yeah, we're going to have to keep fighting about this, Brant.
All right.
Moving on. In the worst parents ever news this week, LDS Living posted an article that was intended to be inspirational, but yeah, sort of blew up.
Oh, did it ever. To set the stage, the story concerns a young man from Washington State who was on his way to the Provo MTC to begin his mission. Along the way, his family decided to camp at Bryce Canyon. Now, this kid really didn't want to serve the mission. And at the 11th hour, he decided to come clean to his parents. And I think it's safe to say that things didn't work out so well. Here's a clip.
Wow. We were in Utah. We decided to do one more family vacation. So my family drove down to Bryce Canyon. And while we were there, I decided to get up the courage and tell my dad that, my stepdad, that I would not be serving a mission. So while I was there, I did that. He made me tell my mom. She was obviously furious. She went to the car. She rounded up my brother and sister, got them in the car, and they took my suitcases out of the van, left them in the dirt at the campsite, and everybody got in the van and they drove off, and they left me in Bryce Canyon, and they drove back home to Washington. So I was left stranded with my missionary suitcases and the trees in the woods in Bryce Canyon, and I was left there.
So this kid ended up calling his grandparents, who came out the next day to pick him up. And his grandfather managed to convince him to go to the MTC. And now he's out on his mission in North Carolina. But I'm trying to figure out whether the worst part of this story is what the parents did, or the fact that LDS Living actually thought that this story was somehow inspiring.
LDS Living got a ton of heat for this story, and I would say rightly so. And just to pour a little more gasoline on the fire, they changed their article when it started getting too hot in the kitchen, rewriting it to focus on how his grandpa was able to change the kid's mind. They totally dropped the part about him being abandoned in Bryce Canyon by his parents. I think we're going to need to issue two awards on this story. First, the Worst Parents of the Year Award, and second, the Most Spineless Journalism Coverage Award. For more on this story, we are introducing a new segment called Sound Off with Steph.
Hey, everybody. So first, I have to disagree a little bit. I think this kid wanted to serve a mission or didn't know if he wanted to serve a mission or not. And that's what bothers me about the story, is that I think really the kid wanted to serve a mission. What he wanted was to be able to tell his family he was conflicted about it. And it's the policing of feelings in the story that really bothers me almost more than the direct action, the parents leaving the kid, which is awful. And then, you know, acting like everything is fine and LDS Living taking it down. The core issue, the issue is these parents would not let the child have emotions or feelings. And that's going to make him a pretty terrible missionary in the first place, because missions are about sharing your feelings and sharing the gospel and sharing your emotions. And if you've been trained that you can't do that or your family will abandon you, that's not a healthy sense of spirituality. So even like this godless heathen recognizes that that's not the way to build a firm testimony, is to tell people to like keep their feelings together. And I also hated when the poor kid was like, well, my mom was obviously furious, as if that's an acceptable or appropriate response. No, it shouldn't be obviously furious. It should be like, what the crap? This is insanity. And I read a lot about this preparing for this segment. And the mom was saying like, oh, this was like a miracle moment. It gave us a chance to think and reflect. And sometimes you have to step back from a moment. And it's like, yeah, step back and like think and collect your emotions. Don't abandon your child. Those are two different things. Sometimes I lock myself in the bathroom to drink Diet Coke and I ignore my children for 2 minutes. That's stepping back. I don't leave my children in a national park. So I don't know. The story's been nagging at me just all week, basically, because I think they've set a precedent that if you don't do what we want, then we can abuse you. And I think that's horrible for LDS Living to promote this as a method of parenting that's effective, because it is abuse. If you leave your child somewhere, and I don't care how old they are, I mean, this kid is like 18 or 19. If you leave a family member somewhere and abandon them without means of transportation in the desert, that's abuse. And there's no other way around it. And the justifying it and promoting it is inspirational. It kind of turns, Mormons don't like regular fun porn, but they do like inspiration porn. And that's what they're turning this into. They're turning it into inspiration porn. Like, look at this trial this kid went through. He had to find his way out of the desert. He became more self-reliant. He learned what his true testimony was. And it's just the grossest type of porn. The Mormons shouldn't like that any more than the regular stuff. That's all I have to say.
Steph Lawrence and everyone, we'll be back with Lindsay Hansen Park. The Mormon News Report is a weekday email sent hot and fresh to your inbox every day by 8 a.m. covering the top stories in Mormonism with a tiny bit of snark. Our focus is on actual news from actual newspapers and reporters covering all aspects of Mormonism. If you're interested in signing up, email mormonnewsreport@gmail.com with your name and zip code. We use that for demographic purposes. You can like the Mormon News Report on Facebook, find us on Twitter @TheMormonNews, or visit theculturalhall.com/Mormon-news-report for more.
We'd like to welcome onto the show Lindsay Hansen Park. Now, we've said it before, Lindsay's probably one of the busiest people that we know. In addition to being the executive director of Sunstone and planning all of their conferences and symposiums, Lindsay also runs a popular podcast titled Year of Polygamy and has devoted her time to working with the polygamist FLDS communities in Colorado City and Hilldale, particularly as these communities are undergoing major changes. We're going to chat about all of this and more, but first, how you doing, Lindsay?
Great. And can I just say, you have the perfect voice for radio. podcasts. It's great.
Well, my voice is definitely better than my face for TV.
So. I was going to say, he's got a...
I got a
never mind. You guys all stole my joke, so never mind.
Your joke.
So, you Lizzie,
know, I try to compliment you, and you guys got to turn it into a dig. I don't know what this is.
Well,
I think you're both adorable.
That's what we were looking for.
You're so Thanks. Pretty.
You know, my ego is inflating over here, Brent. Why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Sure. So, Lindsay, you've been described in many ways, a queen of online Mormonism, a feminist social activist, an organizer, a public historian, as well as possibly a few objectifying adjectives, which we don't need to talk about. How does Lindsay describe Lindsay?
Well, first of all, I feel like all of those things would say that I have maybe a pathetic life that's a little bit too involved in Mormonism, which is fair. I'm a mom. I got three kiddos and I work from home, and Mormonism is very interesting to me. I'm very interested in building healthy Mormon communities. And because I work with so many fundamentalist communities, that has become more and more a priority in the last few years. So I am just really committed to Mormonism in general. And I really have fallen in love with Mormon fundamentalist communities, which might be a strange thing to say. No, I'm not a polygamist. And I probably
you get asked that a lot.
Never will be. Yeah, actually by my own family members. They're like,
are you joining? Are you a joiner?
You're really into this polygamy thing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm into it, but not in that way. Not a polygamist. Never have been, never will be. Hopefully never will be. So
you're like, I'm into it, but not into it.
Yeah, right? Like it's like I really like polygamy intellectually.
You know, I think I've heard like BYU guys use that as pickup lines. I'm really into polygamy intellectually, you know.
I was like remembering someone who told me that about polygamy, and I was like, oh, I just said it, didn't I? It's happening. It's like the body snatchers. I'm becoming one of them.
Do they kind of think of it as kind of the intellectual curiosity as being kind of a gateway to maybe, you know, possibly practicing it as well? Is that their fear?
No, I think that they would say that the Adam God theory is, but maybe that's
and we switch gears right into the Adam God
theory. I was going to say, let's not waste any time, Brian.
So most fundamentalists look at us, LDS, as the gospel, and they call themselves having the fullness of the gospel. So that's kind of the key word. They have the fullness of the gospel. So we're like lower level Mormons, and they're like the higher law. It's kind of interesting.
Which, if you look at the original way that the different tiers of the celestial kingdom worked, they're probably not too far off in that, making that assertion, right?
That's what I tell the FLDS. I've been able to integrate with the faithful FLDS this last year, and I've said, I'm a celestial Mormon. You guys are celestial, so my job is just to serve you. Let me be your administering angel. You guys live the higher law. I'm good with that.
That probably sold pretty well.
It did, actually. That's far from what I actually believe. So, like, if that's the higher law, like, you guys got that locked down, and
I've at it.
Be here.
It's all you.
Yeah.
Was Feminist Mormon Housewives kind of your introduction to this kind of world of Mormon blogging and podcasting?
Yeah, totally. I started blogging as just like this little mommy with this. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was a preschool teacher out of my home, and I was this radical feminist blogger on the side, like you did.
So, Lindsay, let's switch gears. It is the week of the, what I've affectionately called Mormon Lollapalooza, or Mormon Palooza, whatever you want to call it, the week of the Salt Lake City Sunstone Symposium. So, I think we mentioned that you're involved with Sunstone. So, give me a little bit of hints. A, what is Sunstone and what is the symposium? B, when did you become involved with this stuff? And C, and this should be, you know, you should be a polished pro for this one. What does Sunstone mean to Mormonism?
Well, those are some big questions. So Sunstone's been around for 40 years. I've been around for about 5 of those years, Sunstone. And so Sunstone has gone through all kinds of changes and sort of becomes like a reflecting pool of what Utah Mormonism looked like at the time. So 40 years ago, it was sort of the place where if you were like, you know, everyone in their ward has that guy or woman who is like the know-it-all, the scriptorian that knows everything.
Grant.
I didn't mean the guy that won't shut up. I meant the one that actually knows. Just kidding, Grant. I love you. So
you guys have no idea how true this all is. So,
well, Well, so those people didn't have podcasts like we do to hear ourselves talk. So they got together and they had these conferences. And the idea was, you know, like Mormonism is so great and vibrant, and we want to like celebrate it and talk about it in really thoughtful, smart ways. And a lot of us are academics, so let's get together and figure out how to talk about this. So that's how it started. And it was really big and vibrant for a while. And like I said, it's a reflecting pool of the church. And as the church sort of moved into the late 70s and 80s and opened up their archives, and a lot of interesting history, professional history was being discovered, a lot of scholars were bringing new things to light, like, you know, could women have been ordained by Joseph Smith? And, you know, did Joseph Smith ordain Black men to the priesthood? And all of these things that hadn't previously fit sort of the institutional narrative before. So it was really uncomfortable for a lot of people, and it started to become a little too challenging. And of course, I'm being super reductive, but basically what happens is you have these scholars start publishing this stuff. The LDS Church gets a little nervous, asks them to stop. Some of them stop, some of them don't, and the ones that don't eventually get excommunicated. And so by this time, we're in the 90s, and when those scholars get excommunicated, Sunstone then is like, for like a decade, a place that gets really angry and critical at the church. And in 1991, the LDS Church actually put out a statement where they said, you know, we discourage people from going to symposia, basically. And they didn't say Sunstone, but they said symposia, because, and really Sunstone was the only symposia that really had existed. And so there was sort of this chill effect over Sunstone. It went from thousands of people to like 200 overnight, and they thought it was going to die. And then, you know, for like a decade, people were really ticked off about that. They felt like they were being silenced and they were being censored, and people had actually been excommunicated for it. And so it sort of got this reputation, if you will, for being this, you know, this fringe critical organization in the church. And then when the internet happened,
The internet happened.
I don't know if you heard of that thing called the internet. It's kind of a big deal. In the 2000s, like Sunstone started like having to interact with this history in really new and interesting ways. And by the time I got it, it was sort of, there was this like loyal group of people that had been going for 40 years, but they were all getting older and they were saying it was like aging out. And they brought me in to bring in sort of younger generations. And I've talked about this elsewhere, but like when I got to it, I didn't know that much about it, because like I knew what the internet was, had heard of Sunstone, couldn't remember if I was supposed to think that it was a good thing or a bad thing. And people were just like, oh, you just need more faithful people there. And it's like, okay, yeah, we'll just ask more faithful people to speak at Sunstone. Not realizing that like that was impossible. There had been like two decades before me of like institutional barriers for the faithful people to do that. And it became really apparent to me that over the course of, you know, from 91 until now, all these other symposia had popped up in the place of Sunstone. So we had the Mormon History Association that was now doing Mormon history, that was really like, you know, participated by, you know, faithful church leaders, which is kind of ironic considering their statement 91. And then BYU was doing conferences and symposiums, and UVU and Dialogue and all these things. And so all these people kind of like came in and filled the gaps that Sunstone had previously filled. And it became really apparent to me that these organizations depended on Sunstone being like the fringe. So they didn't have to be, right? So it could be like, well, yeah, we're talking about, you know, this hairy stuff in history, but we're not Sunstone. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, oh yeah, so this faithful, not faithful thing, like, some organizations are dependent on it and they need us to be like the critical one. And so I just thought, you know what, that's nonsense. Like, this is, you know, it was like 2014, 2015. Like, we have the internet now. People can go on, find whatever they want. The younger generations don't have any patience or tolerance for this sort of nonsense. I call it faith politics. And so we just sort of like pivoted away from it. And we're like, you know what? We don't care if you're faithful. We don't care if you're not faithful. We don't care if you're Mormon. We don't care if you are Mormon. We don't care if you're Mormon fundamentalist. Mormonism is interesting. It's really interesting. The history is interesting. The theology is interesting. We're going to talk about it. And if you can do that in a respectful way that respects the, you know, very diverse beliefs of all these different kinds of Mormons, then we want you. We don't care if you believe or not. You just have to show up and, you know, be able to talk about Mormonism in a respectful way. So that's what we've been doing. And turned out it's becoming really popular. Lots of people like, you know, sort of engaging Mormonism in a dispassionate sort of secular way. And really what we've done is we've invited all these different Mormon groups. So we have like Mormon fundamentalists that come. So like Roy Jeffs, who is Warren Jeffs' son, is coming this year to talk about what it's like growing up as Warren Jeffs' son. We have people from, you know, we have fundamentalist missionaries from Christ Church or the Peterson group that are going to come and talk about what it's like to grow up as a teenager and be a fundamentalist. And what that does when you have all these different Mormon groups coming, it sort of takes the pressure off of, you know, being critical or faithful with the LDS church, because now you just get to show up and represent your group. So if you're LDS, you get to go come show what the LDS believe. If you're FLDS, you show what the FLDS believe. If you're ex-Mormon, you show what an ex-Mormon Mormon's like. And I always tell ex-Mormons, like, you guys are still Mormon. You just added like two extra letters to your name. You're just doing Mormonism in like a very specific way. So
that's brilliant.
Listen, Lindsay, you know my phrase, Mormons are going to Mormon and ex-Mormons are still going to Mormon, because you can't take the Mormon out of ex-Mormons.
Thank you, Brent. Brant and I, like, we know, we've like moderated online spaces for years. This is just what it is. Like, Mormons are Mormons. And this is what I like to tell people. Like, the reality is, if we're all honest with ourselves, is we all know how to perform the LDS Mormonism, right? Like, we all know how to go to church and say what we say in Sunday school and whatever. But everybody has their stuff. They have their weird quirks or their vices or their secrets or the things that don't quite fit in that script. And to me, those are all legitimate Mormon experiences. I mean, Brian, you know this, as we go through journals of, you know, Mormons, of these like faithful pioneers, you'll read stuff that they do that don't always fit the script. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I never knew pioneers did that. And the reality is that like, those are legitimate experiences too. And so that's at Sunstone, that's what we're interested in. Like, we're interested in how you Mormon. And that's kind of been our tagline, is there's more than one way to Mormon. So we just want people to show up and like, show us how you Mormon as a verb, and how do you do it? How do I not do it? And as long as people can like respect each other's space, turns out it's working pretty well so far.
So, all right. All right. Let me ask. And you know where I'm going to go with this. How do you make sure that people are actually respecting each other? And how do you make sure that, for example, Sunstone isn't just going to be the place where it's the ex-Mormon or disaffected Mormon hangout? I mean, what basically, how would you pitch Sunstone to practicing Mormons?
Okay, so it's just exactly this. I mean, so basically, the way that we've sort of taken the pressure and the tension off of that is by opening it up to many Mormon groups. Now, this is the hard part, because a lot of LDS don't want to associate with polygamists, right? Now, yeah. I do a podcast about polygamy, so I know why that there's this history there. We have a century of trying to distance ourselves from polygamist groups. But because I'm so involved with fundamentalists, I have been to so many different kinds of Mormon churches, I can't even tell you. In fact, I'm having dinner with a prophet tomorrow from one of the Liberian groups. And so prophets I meet all the time. And I'm telling you, like, I have sang our church LDS hymns in a FLDS chapel, hearing a sermon that I would hear in Sunday school. It is very similar. And that might be an uncomfortable truth for us, but I would say the history backs it up. And the theology and doctrine backs it up. And although it's different in some ways, there are a lot of similarities. So we've sort of taken off the pressure of it being an ex-Mormon thing by opening it up to all different kinds of Mormons. So we have Community of Christ, who were the former RLDS. They actually don't identify as Mormon. They don't like that term, because they have some, like, you know, institutional faith politics that prohibit that. They come and participate, and a lot of them are very faithful and very committed. We have a lot of fundamentalists that are coming. We have a lot of, I don't know how to say this, like, extremely conservative members.
Yeah. I mean, I'd almost call them like the neo-Orthodox. They're not even really neo-Orthodox. Like, retrenchment Mormonisms. Like, that's kind of what it is. Like, they're going to go back to the way it used to be, right?
Yeah, like there are so many, like it turns out when you look for it, there are so many different kinds. And so that has taken the pressure off of it. This LDS struggle of like ex-Mormon and TBM is what that, you know, ex-Mormon's called, true believing Mormon. Like we don't play those politics at Sunstone. And so by inviting everybody to come, now it's not about like, are these guys ex-Mormon or not? It's, you'll find, I think the atmosphere is more like there, and it's true, there are like ex-Mormon panels and topics, but again, I consider that Mormon. I think it's very, very Mormon. But you're going to find so much diversity in different Mormon groups that it's not going to threaten your own faith tradition. Does that make sense? The most startling thing that happened to me was I started to see my faith as an outsider. So I grew up judging like polygamists terribly. I thought that they were wrong and wicked and weird. And then when I went and I heard them talking and heard them parrot to me beliefs that like I believed or use phrases that I have used, I was kind of like embarrassed and horrified. And it was such a good learning experience. I was to see your faith through the eyes of others. Like it's so helpful. And I have also found that when those closed off sort of secretive fundamentalist groups integrate and spend time with other groups, they're also hearing it too, because they have judgments about the LDS. So when they hear us saying things, it sort of challenges them. And to me, like, I think that this is the only way that it's going to help communities like the FLDS. Warren Jeffs has used the fact that they are secretive and isolated to get power to do a lot of really terrible things to his people. And so if I have an agenda, it's that I really want to integrate these groups, because I think that we really do need to be challenged. So in the LDS church, I still hear from time to time, you know, someone called Sunstone organized apostasy. I was like, yes, I looked down upon the heathens and said, here are apostates unorganized. It's so silly to me in like 2017 that we still, like, adult people say there's an apostate. But again, it's because I hear this in the FLDS and it's so damaging. And when I hear them say it, it's so ridiculous. Like, it's so harmful and it's so, like, just demented. And now when I hear LDS use it, I'm like, really, guys? Like, do you understand how outsiders hear us? Like, they hear us the same way we hear FLDS doing it. And so to me, like, it's that sort of thinking is challenged at Sunstone, but only in positive ways. So again, like, it's really hard to condemn someone when you're there face to face and you hear a deeply held belief that you can identify with. And I usually find that that does more to teach you about yourself than someone else. And really, I'm seeing it have positive impacts on these fundamentalist communities. So, like, if you're not there to learn yourself, you can be there to help others with, like, be their community and be part of their healing process, which that's the thing that I would say. Like, people say Sunstone is fringe, and I'm like, yeah, of course we are. Like, why aren't you? I mean, like, somebody has to be fringe. Somebody has to be in the government. Somebody has to be doing that work. And like, that's what we're doing. And I get a little self-righteous about it, but I'm kind of like, okay, like, we have the scriptures where they talk about the one and the 90 and nine, and like, you get to decide where you want to be. But like, here being with these, you know, sort of different groups of Mormonism has been some of the most rewarding, challenging work of my entire life. So,
Lindsay, it's been great chatting with you.
Thanks.
Folks, if you're in the Utah area, be sure to check out Sunstone this week. You can see the speaker schedule and buy tickets at sunstonemagazine.org. Also, you can check out Lindsay's Year of Polygamy podcast at yearofpolygamy.com. Now, we have a lot more to discuss with Lindsay, so she's agreed to stick around and chat with us. We'll let you know at the end of the show how you can get the full interview.
We'll be back in a minute.
Apologetics can be defined as a defense of faith through argumentation. Christian apologetics comprise some of the earliest forms of Christian writings. Throughout the centuries, apologists have argued for the reality of God, legitimacy of Scripture, the creation, the fall, the preeminence of grace, and the eschatology of the end times. Adding to these, Mormon apologists have defended Joseph Smith's first vision, the embodiment of God, continuing revelation, extra-biblical scripture and temple rituals, among other topics, and have reached new levels of sophistication through training in fields such as history, philosophy, and Near Eastern languages and culture. Through multiple perspectives, the contributors to this volume explore the textures and contours of apologetics, revealing deep ideological fissures within the Mormon studies community concerning its utility. In spite of these deep-seated differences, what each author has in common is a passion for Mormonism and how it is presented and defended. This volume captures that reality and allows readers to encounter the terrain of Mormon apologetics at close range. Learn more about perspectives on Mormon theology, apologetics, by visiting gregcoford.com.
And now for your moment in history, brought to you by Today in Mormon History. 120 years ago this week, Wilford Woodruff wrote in his diary, quote, "I received a copy of the Pioneer Program and read some of it, from which I felt outraged in my feelings, and in the evening expressed myself vigorously as to the manner I have been treated. I am one of the first and oldest pioneers with which my position in the church should entitle me to some consideration. Not one of my sons or any of my family have been asked to take any part in the Pioneer proceedings, whilst the Clausens and their friends and associates are into everything. I felt like sending for Brother Spencer Clausen so as to free my mind, but concluded to wait until after the Jubilee and then express myself."
Well, as long as he doesn't express himself on Facebook, then he should be okay.
And that's our show. We'd like to thank Lindsay Hanson Park for being our guest. Be sure to check out the Mormon News Report extended sessions on Patreon for our full interview with her. Just visit patreon.com and search Mormon News Report, or go to patreon.com/Mormon News Report. And remember, you can subscribe to our show directly on your podcast app by searching for the Mormon News Report.
Or you can listen to us every Monday on the Cultural Hall podcast. We'd like to thank Steph Lauritsen for joining us. Music is performed by Scott Holmes.
And we'd especially like to thank our listeners. If you like what we're doing, share it with your friends. If you're so inclined, give us a review on iTunes. It helps with our search rankings, and we may even reach your comment on the air.
And if you want to reach out to us and let us know how we're doing, you can email us at mail@mormonnewsreport.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Until next week, we'll talk to you again after a while.